Good evening, and thanks for tuning in to RMU Radio. My name is Matt, and Chris is with me, and this is Sports Takeover, so let's get started. We're going to start in the soccer world, and we're going to start right here in Pittsburgh with the Pittsburgh Riverhounds, who are playoff-bound this year. Chris, let's hear some thoughts on the Pittsburgh Riverhounds.
This is a team I really haven't paid much attention to much till I got to college. This is the first time they've made the playoffs since 2015. They seem to be a different team this year, actually. You know, they have a new coach, a lot of new players, to put together a really good team. Have the most wins on the team since 2004. They actually seem like a real playoff contender, too.
Yeah, I agree. You talked about their first playoff appearance since 2015. It's kind of been a struggle for them here in recent years. They brought in a new coach this year. His name is Bob Lilly. He has some playoff success with other teams in the USL. this is going to be the first playoff game that they've hosted at Highmark Stadium. And actually, it turns out this is their 100th game at Highmark Stadium. So kind of a big game for them here coming up.
Huge.
Their last playoff win was 2004. So they are certainly overdue.
Absolutely.
You talked about their wins this season. They finished with a record of 15-5 and 14 in the regular season. That was good for third in the Eastern Conference. A lot of ties on that record for them. We'll see what happens with that when it comes down to the wire come playoff time. Their opponent here in their first round game is going to be the Bethlehem Steel. Bethlehem finished 14-12-8, sixth in the Eastern Conference. Head-to-head, Pittsburgh took both of the games that they played against them by a combined score of 6-2. Overall, Pittsburgh definitely the better team. They actually have the top defense in the USL this year. Tied for 14th in goal scoring, so kind of there in the middle. But certainly that defense, I think, gives them a great chance in this week coming up. Bethlehem is tied for 9th offensively and 13th defensively. I don't know. I kind of feel good about the Riverhounds this week.
Yeah, especially since you said they had the 6-2 record or 6-2 goal differential over the two games to play against Bethlehem. I think having the game at home, they'll get the fans amped up for it. First playoff game at home, like you said, since 2004. 100th game at Highmark Stadium. A lot of big milestones this week. New coach, new playoffs, a lot of good things looking in the Riverhounds' direction this week.
That last home playoff game that they hosted in 2004, could you guess where they played that game?
I would have to guess a high school on the south side.
Moon High School.
Moon High School, all
right. Yeah, so right next door to us.
Not quite the south side.
Last time the Riverhounds hosted a playoff game, 2004, at a high school field. Much different this time around. Their own place, 100th game for that stadium for them. Definitely, I think, going to be a big atmosphere. They even just expanded the stadium, plans that they've had in the works since the beginning of the season. Better late than never, I guess. They're finally there, so hopefully that brings some more people into the stadium for them this week.
Yeah, the fans better show up for all those extra seats they've added.
That's right. Pittsburgh Riverhounds, first playoff game since 2015. That'll be this Saturday. Moving right along, we're going to go to the NFL. QBs and contenders, Chris. A lot has happened in the last week, and a lot has happened since the last time we covered power rankings. So let's talk about some power rankings, and let's talk about some quarterbacks too, because we've seen some quarterbacks lead some crazy comebacks here just in the last week alone. So why don't you start with the quarterbacks?
All right, this week we saw some classic comebacks from the likes of Ben Roethlisberger, Tom Brady, and Aaron Rodgers, each leading their team the fourth quarter in success overall in the game. Kind of the same thing we've seen from those three quarterbacks a lot in their career. The Steelers were down 21-20 to the Bengals. Ben led a great drive, led to us winning 28-21. Patriots were tied with the Chiefs 40-40. Gronk was hooked up with by Brady, led to a Gostkowski field goal. Aaron Rodgers was down a touchdown, led the touchdown drive, and led the game-winning field goal drive. Really remarkable stuff from all three of these guys this week. I was impressed.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers is a guy that we've seen do it multiple times. We saw him do it earlier this season against Chicago. Big Ben in that Steelers offense, that's one that, I mean, if you're going to have any quarterback in any offense in general to get it done, that's certainly going to be one of the ones that you want. And Tom Brady, I mean, he's been doing it for years. That Chiefs defense is they can be not the strongest, certainly susceptible to something like that. Brady took full advantage.
I got some great stats on these three, actually. Tom Brady, in his career, is second in fourth quarter comeback or game-winning drives with 35. Big Ben is tied at sixth overall. This is amongst all quarterbacks in all of NFL, by the way. Big Ben is tied at sixth overall with Drew Brees with 30. Aaron Rodgers is actually surprisingly low on this list. He's 83rd overall with only 13. People always say, I want Aaron Rodgers in the fourth quarter. Only 13 times, though. I don't know. That's kind of a surprising stat, in my opinion.
That's interesting. I mean, the other two, I guess, have been doing it a little bit longer than he has. No, yeah, I'm surprised by that number. I would have also guessed it would have been higher, and I probably would have been one of the ones to say I would have wanted him as my quarterback in the fourth quarter.
I mean, he certainly looked formidable, but the fact that it's only been 13 is kind of surprising to me. Some other numbers from quarterbacks that are currently in the league: Eli Manning, Matt Ryan, and Matthew Stafford all are tied at 11th with 26. Phillip Rivers is number 16 with 24. So when you go back to that 2004 class with Eli, Phillip, Rivers, and Ben is the top of those three, actually. He's definitely the guy you want from that class. And the fact that he's above guys or tied even with Drew Brees started a few years before Ben. Ben has done more in less time. It's really remarkable.
So I guess the one thing I could see with Aaron Rodgers is that's been a pretty good Green Bay Packers team for as long as he's been around. Probably doesn't have to come from behind as much.
True.
But when I look at it that way, it almost surprises me more with Tom Brady, because you would think the same thing about the Patriots, would you not?
You would think that, but maybe the reason that they have all the wins they do is because he can orchestrate these great fourth quarter comebacks, though. I mean, at the end of the day, you're just looking at the win-loss column. You're not looking at when did they get the win or when did they get the loss, whether they had the lead in the second quarter or a minute left in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, that's very true. Those are some interesting quarterback numbers. Let's move on now to some power rankings. We did power rankings 3 weeks ago. Obviously, with the type of NFL season that we've had and the crazy things that happen week to week, those power rankings are going to change quite a bit, I'm sure. So, Chris, why don't you lead us off in the AFC?
In the AFC, I've got the Patriots at number one, followed by the Chiefs at number two. The head-to-head this past week, I kind of think, was the decider between those two, who was going to be one and two. Patriots came out on top, have to be one. Number three, it was really hard for me to choose, so I went with two number threes, actually. I have the Los Angeles Chargers and the Baltimore Ravens. The Chargers are a 4-2 team that has lost to the 6-0 Rams and the 5-1 Chiefs. Very, very good losses. The Ravens are a team that kind of gave one away to Cleveland 2 weeks ago, but this past week had 11 sacks on Marcus Mariota. Quite astounding defense, so I'm going to have to go with both of them at number three.
Yeah, so I agree on the top two. I have the Patriots at one and the Chiefs at two. The Chiefs, I definitely felt like they had to be there, if nothing else, because of their record at 5-1.
Yep.
Definitely their offense, fifth in offense, second in points per game. Their defense, like I said just a little bit ago, not good. It's dead last in the NFL. To this point, they've had an offense that has been able to outdo what the damage that the defense has done. That's why they're where they're at. And just based on record, I think you have to have them above virtually everybody except for, in my opinion, the Patriots. Yeah, the Patriots are 4-2, but the Patriots, just being the Patriots, I think we can expect more than that out of them.
Yeah.
As we progress in the season, they just beat the Chiefs. You kind of said it, who would come out on top in that game would sort of dictate who we looked at as the top in the AFC. You know, the Patriots were at 1-2. People were freaking out. I think it was just a matter of time. We're to that point now. Offensively and defensively, the Patriots aren't anything special right now. 14th in offense, 20th in defense, but they are fourth in points per game, which I think is huge. Part of the reason that they're 4-2. They've scored 38 points at least in each of their last three games. 38, 38, and I believe 43 against the Chiefs. That kind of offense is tough to beat.
Yeah, I agree, especially when you see Julian Edelman rejoin the team this past week after his suspension. Got a healthy Gronk. You have Josh Gordon now, who might be understanding the playbook a little bit better. James White, the backfield is always dangerous, and Tom Brady himself is never anyone to look past. That offense is scary, very scary. They kind of mirror the Chiefs a bit, though. Their defense isn't that great, but if they're putting up, you know, 38 points in the last three games, like you said, I don't think it really matters how good their defense is.
Yeah, I agree. When you have an offense scoring like that, your defense only has to do so much. At number three, then, I have the Baltimore Ravens. I was like you. I was between them and the Chargers. I picked one. I picked the Ravens. One of the few teams right now to be top 10 statistically in offense and defense. They have the 9th-ranked offense, and they have the top-ranked defense. They only allow 12.8 points per game, which I think is a great number. Obviously, mm-hmm. The offense, kind of the flip side of these other teams, the offense only has to do so much when that's what your defense is doing. They have losses against Cincinnati and Cleveland. You talked about them giving one away against Cleveland. I agree with that. The Cincinnati game, they didn't look with it.
No.
But they have looked with it in some other games. They just shut out the Titans 21-0. Tennessee's not a bad team. Not that they're a great team, but they're not a bad team. Baltimore made them look like a bad team. I don't know that I believe in Baltimore to keep this up. But for me right now, when you look at that mix of 4-2 teams, Baltimore is the team that I think is just maybe a little bit better than those other teams. San Diego, 7th-ranked offense, 13th-ranked defense. You talked about their two losses. You know, it was by 10 and 12 points each. So that's kind of where I have a little bit of an issue with them, but they are fifth in points. So certainly another team that's right there. The Dolphins, the Bengals, both also at 4-2. Both of those teams rank poorly offensively and defensively. So they have the record to support them being a good team. Statistically, they don't necessarily have those numbers. For me, those two teams are both teams that I kind of have to wait and see what happens with them.
Yeah.
I have a record telling me one thing and stats telling me a different thing, so we'll see what happens with them. Pittsburgh at 3-2-1, sixth-ranked offense. Again, defense isn't there. 3-2-1, they're a step below those other teams that are at 4-2. They have won two games in a row. Maybe they're putting the pieces together, but certainly I don't think I can put them in my top three right now.
The one thing that you mentioned about the Ravens I want to touch on, you said their losses were to the Bengals and the Browns. They're going to see both of those teams again in the future.
Right.
So they're 1-2 in the division right now. They beat the Steelers. If they mirror that and go 2-4, that's going to be tough to win in that division when our division is so close the way it is right now. But like you said, they're in the top 10 in both offense and defense. And I mentioned the 11 sacks they had. That was to Marcus Mariota's 10 completions all game. The Ravens' defense sacked Mariota more than he threw the ball to his own players.
Wow.
That's a defense that's scary. When you look at great teams in the past few years that have won the Super Bowl, defense wins championships. You see the Broncos team from a few years ago, the Legion of Boom with the Seahawks. The Ravens might be a team that is built for the future. They just need to win in their division, though. That's the most important part, I think. And you mentioned Miami and Cincinnati right outside. Those teams are interesting because both of them, I think, showed something very true about their teams these past past week. The Bengals, that they can't really – they're there, but they're just not ever right up there. Like, they had the Steelers on the ropes. They were up by one and less than 3 minutes left, blew the game. Miami, on the flip side, had to turn to backup Brock Osweiler, and they put up over 500 yards against a very strong Bears defense with Brock Osweiler. That's just – they're an interesting team that I don't know what to think about at this point in the season. It's very hard to decide who they are.
Yeah, you would think 6 weeks in we'd have a little bit more clarity. I still don't feel like – and it's not just those two. There's plenty of other teams too. But I still don't feel like we have that clarity that you might think we would at this point. One more quick thing about Baltimore's defense. I think it'll be interesting to see how that plays in as the season progresses because a lot of the teams that we've talked about already at the top have good offenses and poor defenses.
Yeah.
So when you put them against a team, whether it's playoff time or just down the stretch here in the regular season, when you put them against a team that's the total opposite, not the total opposite, they have a decent offense, but when they're a defensive team, taking on one of those teams with a potent offense and no defense, I think it'll be interesting to see how that plays out as well.
Yeah, I agree with that. Now let's move into the NFC where things, I think, are even more murky than the AFC. My power or top three were going to be the Rams at first. They're 6-0. They're the only undefeated team in football. They're number one in the league in total record. I don't think there's any way you could put them anywhere else. The Saints I have at number two. They're actually the only one-loss team in the NFC at 4-1. My number three, I had such a difficulty picking because there's so many teams that have three wins. I settled on the Chicago Bears, even though they lost this past week. They're a 3-2 team that's lost because Aaron Rodgers led a great comeback, like you mentioned. And I don't understand what happened this past week against the Dolphins. They should have been a team that could go 4-1 easily, and they just kind of – their defense just didn't show up for some reason, but I still have to put them third.
Yeah, so again, I'm going to agree with you on the top two. I have the Rams and I have the Saints. The Rams are first in offense, third in points, first in rushing, and their defense is 11th. Not great, but when you compare it with some other teams, you know, like we're talking about, I think it kind of makes them a more complete team than some of these other teams they're competing against. The Saints are third in offense, first in points. They've won four games in a row, and their only loss was to Tampa Bay, and they scored 40 points. So obviously the defense didn't show up in that game, but the offense was still more than capable. So I think the Saints are a very interesting team. Drew Brees, of course, is a quarterback that makes it hard to count out that team ever. At number three, I went with the Green Bay Packers. Again, kind of because of the quarterback. Aaron Rodgers has done it twice this season. Mm-hmm. They're sitting at 3-2-1. They're right in there in the mix of all those teams with three wins like you talked about. The Bears are 3-2. The Redskins are 3-2. The Panthers are 3-2. Minnesota's 3-2-1. But the Packers are fourth in offense and seventh in defense. Again, one of those few teams that are in the top 10 in both of those categories statistically. I think that works in their favor. One thing that I don't know works in their favor is they average 24.7 points per game. On average, they give up 24.
That's not a lot.
No, it's not a lot at all. And if you can make any argument for them not being there, or if you can point at any reason for them being only 3-2-1, that's probably it right there is the points. But you talked about the Bears. I have them right there, probably at my number four if we took it that far. I just, this past week kind of scares me a little bit. I had the Bears in my top three last time we did this. And part of the reason was because of that defense. And their offense ranks 19th. I think if it stays there all season, that'll be good enough or close to good enough because they rely on their defense.
Right.
But then when you give up 31 points and 500 yards to a backup quarterback in Brock Osweiler, that makes me nervous. And that's not to say Osweiler's a bad quarterback. That's not to say that the Dolphins are a bad team. But to me, that's if you're playing against a backup quarterback and you're a defense that is carrying your team, that's a game that I feel like you should probably win.
I think one thing about that Miami game, though, was something that the Steelers saw two seasons ago. The temperature in Miami that game was 88 degrees. Chicago's not exactly an 88-degree kind of football town during the
fall.
That
is true.
So when the Steelers played in Miami 2 years ago, Jay Ajayi had over 200 yards rushing against us because our players just gassed. I feel like someone has to do with that a little bit, too, because I saw a report today, actually, that one of the Bears players lost 12 pounds during the game.
Wow.
Yeah, that's, I would have to imagine it's from all the heat and humidity. I mean, when you look at stadiums that are tough to play in, you kind of put Miami up there just for how hot it is. I'm not saying that's the reason why they won, but it certainly has something to do with it.
You're right. That's a very good point.
The trouble I have putting the Packers in my top three is they were two Aaron Rodgers comebacks away from being 1-4-1. I mean, if he didn't do the miraculous effort he did against Chicago and then the two miraculous drives he had against San Francisco, they would be a very different team. And the loss against Detroit was not even close really at all in that whole game. It was Mason Crosby had a rough segment. We talked about that a little bit last week.
Yeah, it could have been close.
But still, there's just so much murkiness between all these teams. I thought the Panthers were going to be an easy team to put in my top three. I had them in there earlier in the year. They lost to the Redskins, who are a team I also don't know what to think of because they've had games where they've looked like they could be a top team in their division, and they've had teams they look like they're the worst team in their division. There's too many teams that are not playing the right type of game at the right time for me to pick a solid three in the NFC.
Yeah, I had the Redskins in my top three the last time we did this with the Bears. And I didn't put them in there this time. I probably could have. I think when you look at these teams with three wins, you can pretty much take your pick. Because from week to week, you see something different. You know, they get blown out of the water by New Orleans coming off their bye week. And you think, well, I guess I was wrong on this Redskins team. And then they come out and they beat Carolina, who was a one-loss team when they played. And that puts you right back thinking, well, maybe I wasn't wrong about this team, but I don't know. And you're looking at teams that are one-dimensional. Washington has the fifth-ranked defense in the NFL.
That's pretty good.
But their offense is ranked 25th.
That's pretty bad.
It's horrendous. The Panthers are 14th in defense. Not great, not horrible. Offense is 22nd. So, again, you're looking at a team that's statistically pretty average. Minnesota, 10th in offense, 16th in defense, from a defense that you would expect to be in the top five.
Yeah, for how they played last year.
Right, so there's just a lot of stuff that we still need to see from these teams.
You know, I think that when we revisit these power rankings in a few weeks, our top threes are going to be different in each league again.
I think so, too. I mean, I think right now 1 and 2 are kind of clear.
Yeah.
Given the way that the NFL has gone so far, I'm not sure that they'll stay clear. But I think maybe those three spots will be a little bit clearer by the time we revisit this again.
Yeah, I sure hope so, because if there's a lot of teams that have the same record again, it's going to be very difficult once again to pick.
Very interesting football, though. Very entertaining for sure.
Absolutely.
So moving on to college football, you know, there's a lack of clarity in the NFL. Maybe there's a little bit more clarity in college football now. Do you think that the contenders are starting to separate themselves a little bit?
Yes and no. So this past week, there was 11 undefeated teams going into the weekend. After the weekend, we saw 8 with the losses of Georgia, Colorado, and West Virginia. The top four looked pretty solid, being Alabama number 1, Ohio State moved up to number 2, Clemson at number 3, Notre Dame at number 4. While I say they look solid, there's been a lot of close games for all of those teams except for Alabama. Ohio State had a close one in Happy Valley against Penn State. Clemson has had a close one against Syracuse, and Notre Dame did not look like that great of a team against a very average Pitt team this past week. So while those teams have kind of shot up to the top, everybody's kind of saying they're the top four right now. I don't know what to think of them, except for Alabama.
Yeah, so you're right. They do have some games that, you know, they weren't dominant like you expected them to be maybe. But for me, those are the top four teams, hands down. They're teams that have earned their spot there. And I think more importantly, they are teams that as long as they play to their potential, can keep their spots there. Obviously, Ohio State will have a big matchup with Michigan coming up. Alabama has to get through that SEC schedule, but they're sitting where they want to be right now. No losses on the record. I think that those are, for me, the top four teams right now. I think there were some teams that took a big hit, though, this week. You talk about Georgia losing by 20 points to LSU. Not close. LSU is a good team, but Georgia was the number two team in the country, losing by 20 points. I don't think that eliminates them from playoff contention, but it's certainly a big hit to them. There were some other schools that lost that I do think the loss takes them out, for all intents and purposes, out of playoff contention. West Virginia loses 14-30 to Iowa State.
Yeah.
They fall to 5-1. They drop to 13th. There are two Big 12 schools ahead of them in the top 25. I don't think the Big 12 is that strong in the first place. To be the third in the rankings, I don't think that bodes well for them. Washington loses 27-30 to Oregon. Oregon's a good team, but that's two losses now for Washington. They fall to 15. I don't see them working their way back up into a playoff spot. Penn State loses to Michigan State 17-21. It's another team that now has two losses. When you're in that, you know, Big Ten East with Ohio State and Michigan, who now looks more like a contender than they did early in the season, I think that doesn't bode well for Penn State. And assuming that they miraculously would win the East and play in the Big Ten title game, you're still looking at a Wisconsin or an Iowa. I don't like that for Penn State. I think they're pretty much out of playoff contention. And then Wisconsin. They were 15th coming in. They lose 13-38 to Michigan. Again, Michigan is a good football team. We thought Wisconsin was too. You got to have a better showing than that if you're Wisconsin. They're another two-loss team. They're down to number 23 into the musical chairs region
yeah,
of the top 25.
Region.
Yes, that's right. So I think that they're below Iowa now. I think that really takes Wisconsin out of the picture too.
Yeah, and when you look at the college football playoff in the past few years, they haven't ever included a two-loss school in the playoff. So all these teams... Honestly, these teams that you mentioned, like Penn State, like Wisconsin, these were games they absolutely had to win.
Yes.
The one interesting thing about Penn State is that Trace McSorley hadn't lost at home until this season, and they've lost twice now at home to Ohio State and Michigan State. There's a lot of one-loss schools that we have in the top 10. I'm going to have to ask you, out of these one-loss schools that we see, which two do you think have the best chance of making the college football playoff?
So for me, it's actually pretty easy. And I mean, if you look at the rankings, this is right where they fall. Number 5, LSU, and number 6, Michigan. LSU sitting at 6-1, dominant win against what was number 2, Georgia. Obviously, with the SEC schedule that they will continue to have to play, certainly the possibility is there for them to lose, fall into that two-loss team category, and take themselves out of the playoffs. But if you win those SEC games, that's a team that's got as good a shot as any. And even if they just kind of take care of business the rest of the way, one of those teams in front of them loses, now you're in the top 4, you're sitting in a playoff spot, you just have to defend from there. So I think that's big for LSU. Michigan's the other one. Their only loss on the season is to Notre Dame, who, as we've talked about, is undefeated and in the top 4. To me, early in the season, I saw that loss. Kind of was turned off by Michigan a little bit, kind of focused on just Ohio State and Penn State. Well, Penn State's out of the picture now. When Michigan plays Ohio State, that could very well be a deciding game in the Big Ten East. I like Michigan. I think they definitely still have a chance. Maybe not a favorite, but I think they have a chance.
Yeah, I agree with you on both of those. In order for LSU to be a one-loss school at the end of the season, they have to beat Alabama. So I feel like that would have to propel them above them. And like you mentioned, Michigan would have to beat Ohio State to be in that conversation. I think these one-loss schools they put themselves in good places. I think another one that you can kind of look at on the outside looking in, maybe Florida. Florida is now 6-1. They have the victory against LSU, who is now number 5 once again. They're a team that doesn't have to play Alabama, so they have a little bit of an easier schedule in the SEC at least, because Alabama is just such a tough team to play. Georgia, I have a tough time putting up there because, and like we mentioned last week, including last week and the next 3 weeks, they play ranked teams in all 4 weeks. That's a very murderous row of 4 straight games. So if they manage to win their next 3, they're definitely going to be back up there. But right now, I can't see them there. And like you mentioned about the Big 12, we have Texas at number 7, Oklahoma at number 9. I don't know how strong those two teams really are. Texas has the upper hand against Oklahoma having beat them, but neither of them really have much strength of schedule. The Big 12 is not great. An Iowa State team could knock off one of the teams later in the season. So I don't know that I can put them up there, but right now I think LSU and Michigan do solidify themselves as the best looking in.
Yeah, I agree. Florida, I like you said, definitely is there as well. They've got some more teams to jump over. The Big 12, as far as I'm concerned right now, I think the Big 12 will be left out of the college football playoff until I see something that tells me otherwise. Given the Big 10 teams that are above them, the SEC teams that are above them, Notre Dame who's above them, I'm not buying the Big 12 right now.
Yeah, Notre Dame puts the Big 12 in a tough situation, being that independent school kind of affects the scheme of, oh, how much does a conference championship really mean whenever there's no conference for Notre Dame to win. So
right.
Definitely some interesting things to divulge in the next coming weeks in college football. Moving on, we have some baseball news. Not really a lot of news, but just kind of an update where we are. The two championship series are going on right now. Dodgers and Brewers are tied at 2-2 in the series. Red Sox and Astros. Red Sox are up 2-1 on the Astros. What kind of things have we seen so far in this championship series, Matt?
Well, let's start in the NLCS. You said tied 2-2. It's been a pretty even series. Milwaukee took game 1 6-5. Dodgers evened it up with a 4-3 win. 4-0 Milwaukee, that's the widest margin we've seen, because then the Dodgers came back in game 4 and won 2-1. So it's been very even throughout. Game 5 is currently going on. I believe we're at the end of the 8th inning, a 5-1 Dodgers lead. So we talked about this last week, and I think it's coming in. Coming into play big time.
I knew
right
where
now.
You're going.
You know where I'm going. It's that 2-3-2 format in Major League Baseball playoffs. This is exactly the situation where it's a problem. You have a 2-2 series tie. From here, it's a best of three. Now, while Milwaukee does get two of those three games at home, they don't get the pivotal game 5 at home. L.A. does. And L.A. is taking full advantage right now with a 4-run lead as we head into the 9th. That bothers me to no end.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
If you earn home field advantage, you should have home field for every game that could potentially break a tie. Well, game 5 can potentially break a tie, and not only can it break a tie, if you're on the wrong side of that tie break, you're facing elimination. So yes, Milwaukee will have the next two games at their place, but they have to win both of them or they're done. Their season's over, and I don't like that. For me, this game should have been in Milwaukee. Whether that changes the outcome or not, obviously we can't say for sure, but I certainly think it increases their chances if they're playing this game at home.
And one of the big things about baseball, I agree with everything you've said, the 2-3-2 is dumb, should be 2-2-1-1-1.
Yes.
Baseball is like the only sport that each stadium is uniquely shaped differently. Whenever you have home field advantage, you want to be in the field that you know the dimensions of. Obviously, Milwaukee has very different wall dimensions and lengths than LA does. Different climate. They have an enclosed roof. LA is open. Different weather. Those are factors people don't necessarily think about, but they're still very important, especially in baseball. You want to be able to have control of your own destiny at home. The home team bats second. A lot of better things for the home team in general, but especially the field dimensions, I think, are huge, huge, especially whenever LA has played 81 games now in the playoffs extra at home. Milwaukee's played 81 at home. You know that field all the way through your heart by now. You want to be on that field, and you want the home field advantage, too, with the support from your own fans, you know, ragging against the opposition players in a very, very pivotal game. Because now you have, while if they lose this game, they have two opportunities to win. The Dodgers have one opportunity to win. That's all they need to take. It's very annoying.
Yeah, that's a really good point, too, about the dimensions. And something, like you said, people don't think about because you're used to a place where, well, home fans are the only thing that make a difference. Well, there's more to it this time. One other point here about Game 5, I thought this was really interesting. Milwaukee pulled their starting pitcher, Wade Miley, after 5 pitches and announced that he will be starting in Game 6. The only thing I can figure is that that was to mess with the lineup of the Dodgers, make them think they were facing one guy, pull him after one batter, now you're facing another guy. Obviously, it's not working for them right now. What do you think about that move?
There's a lot I don't like about the way that pitchers have been handled in the playoffs. I hate this a lot, actually, because this is a very pivotal Game 5. You want to put your best player on the mound that puts you in the best place for your team to win. You want your guy to give you 5, 6, maybe even 7 innings if he's doing well enough. To put a guy out there and play chess after taking him out for one batter to go straight to your bullpen, while the bullpen's a strength, you want your starter to go out there so the bullpen doesn't have to pitch the entire game. I don't like it. It shows that Craig Counsell doesn't really have faith in his starting pitching. You want to have faith in your team in this kind of situation. I don't understand the move. It's not one that we've seen really before. Yes, pitchers have been pulled after 1, 2, 3 innings. But after 5 pitches, why are you playing chess when you got the game right ahead of you right now? You got a game of checkers tonight. Forget about the chess tomorrow night. You got to worry about what's right in front of you, and I don't like this move at all.
Very interesting way of looking at it, and I agree. I think it's a very odd move. I think it's one of those moves that if it works for them, you say, oh, bold move, he's a genius, good for him. Obviously, it's not working out. We'll see what people have to say about it. Look at the ALCS. They have game four later on tonight. Boston has a 2-1 series lead. Chris, thoughts on this series?
Well, this series I really thought was going to go seven games. I think the Astros have every opportunity to tie it up tonight. I think by them tying up tonight, we'll see another game five where the wrong team has the wrong home field advantage.
Yep.
But that's a lot of speculation. Right now it is 2-1 Boston. Boston was the best team in the regular season. They're a better team in the series now. The Chris Sale dilemma, though, is kind of an issue for Boston. He was sick the other day, misses, had to go to the hospital, actually. He's coming back. He's not starting game five. He's going to start game six. It's interesting. It's a tough decision whenever Chris Sale is a Cy Young candidate, definitely the best pitcher on the Red Sox, for him to miss an important game five, regardless of the outcome tonight's game. It's a blow to them. It kind of gives the Astros confidence, too, I think. They see, okay, we're not going to see Sale now. We can go full guns blazing. We can really do well at home in a game five situation. I think the Astros have the upper hand, even though they are down 2-1 in the series right now.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Porcello and Morton, that'll be the pitching matchup tonight. So the thing that concerns me in this series, if you're Houston, is some of the scores. Houston took game one 7-2, pretty dominating fashion. Mm-hmm. They turn around and lose game two 7-5, lose game three 8-2. That is a lot of runs to give up for a team that does so well pitching. And obviously, it's only two games. We'll see where it goes from here. But for me, I kind of looked at the Astros as having an advantage maybe because of their pitching, or that if they won their series, pitching is what would win it for them. And right now, pitching is what's losing it for them. Granted, two runs scored last night is not going to win you many games. But you would think for a team that's pitched so well all season, scoring five runs in game two would get you a win in game two against Boston. You talked about the 2-3-2. I think if Houston wins tonight, that absolutely works in their favor for game five. It's very interesting.
One of the things about the game two kind of goes back to my field dimension thing. Jackie Bradley Jr., there was bases loaded. He had a three-run double because the ball hit the Green Monster, bounced off the ground, rolled along a ledge on the wall, allowing all three runners to score. Just kind of an interesting tidbit. You don't see that kind of thing in Houston Stadium by far. You only see it in Boston Stadium. You kind of want that in a game five. Some weird bounces off the monster always help. Also, their right field line is the shortest in the league. So just some things, food for thought. That's all I'm saying. Food for
thought. That's right. That's right. A 2-3-2 that it could have some serious impacts here on these series. Again, right now, the Dodgers are up 5-1 on Milwaukee. Milwaukee's down to their last out in that game. Game four between Boston and Houston is tonight in just a matter of minutes.
All right, we're going to take a quick break right now, but coming up, we got some NHL talk. A lot of things have happened these first 2 weeks. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Sports Takeover on RMU Radio, Matt and Chris. We're going to move into the National Hockey League now, talk about some starts that these teams are off to, and a little bit of injury news as well. Start with the Toronto Maple Leafs, who are off to a hot start, Chris.
In fuego. The Maple Leafs are 6-1, 12 points. They have Austin Matthews leading the league in scoring with 7 goals, 10 assists for 16 points. Morgan Rielly with 3 goals, 10 assists, 13 points. Then John Tavares and Mitch Marner close behind, each with 11 points. This is an offense that is extremely scary. Power play specifically, lethal, 47.4%. Half the time you put this power play out there, they're getting a goal for you. And that shows in the total goals per game department with 4.71. They've had a great start, but where they go from here, though, I don't know.
Yeah, you threw out a lot of good numbers there. I won't repeat them. But they do have a plus 10 goal differential, which is second in the NHL to New Jersey, who has not lost yet, so certainly doing well there for Toronto. I think you mentioned that their record is 6-1, mm-hmm. Certainly a good start through 7 games. Their penalty kill, you talked about the power play, the penalty kill is also doing well. They're at 8th in the league so far, early in the season, of course, but if you can be top 10 in special teams on both sides, you're going to be in good shape. Austin Matthews is one of 5 players ever to start the season with 7 straight multi-point games.
Remarkable.
And I'm sure you can imagine some of the names that he's in there with, Mario Lemieux, Wayne Gretzky, players of that caliber. So not only is it a fantastic start to the season for the Maple Leafs, a fantastic start for Austin Matthews as well.
I think what we're really seeing with this Maple Leafs team is Mike Babcock. I don't really care for the guy, but he is a very, very good coach. He's been with the Maple Leafs for a few years now. A lot of these players I mentioned, Matthews, Rielly, Marner, they've been developed from within Toronto, so you can see the influence Babcock's had on them, offensive heavy. He's really helping them out. I don't think either of us said that they would be the best team in their division earlier in the year. Do our opinions change now? Mine doesn't change. I don't think they can keep this up. While it is a good start, I feel like they will plateau eventually. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think you see a lot of starts like that in the season. New Jersey, like I said, they're sitting at 4-0. I don't think New Jersey is going to lead the Metro.
No.
It's just the start to the season. And it certainly is a good sign for Toronto. I think knowing that this capability is there is fantastic. I still think after 82 games it'll be Tampa Bay. But I think Toronto is going to be right there. I think Toronto is going to have a presence come playoff time. 6-1, over 4 goals a game, good for them. They have, I believe you said it, 4 players right now at the top of the league in scoring. I don't see that holding up by the end of the season. But it is scary to know that when they have all their top players putting together a stretch like this, they can go on a tear.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say that this cools off in the middle of the season and they find it again towards the end. It's all about getting hot at the right time. And if the Maple Leafs show this that they're doing right now come the end of the regular season, come playoff time, I think they're a scary team. But no, I don't think that they're – I'm still sticking with Tampa Bay right now.
Yeah, you kind of wonder if they're going to mirror the Capital teams of past Capitals teams in the past years, not last year, but years before that. Kind of were really strong in the fall, really strong in the winter, kind of fell off the pace in the spring come playoff time. You wonder if you're going to see that from Toronto, but as of right now this season, Toronto, by far and far, the best team in the NHL. On the flip side of that, we have kind of a weaker team in the Western Conference that I don't think either of us think we're going to start this slow. Matt, what team am I talking about here?
The Las Vegas Golden Knights. The Golden Knights are 3-4, and that's coming off of a two-game winning streak. They were sitting at 1-4 just a little bit ago.
Yikes.
Fourth in the Pacific Division, 21st in the National Hockey League. Of course, very early. But Marc-Andre Fleury, .896 save percentage to this point.
Not hot.
2.7 goals against. Isn't horrible, but that save percentage isn't great. Paul Stastny is what worries me. We talked about him earlier when we talked about Vegas.
We did.
In previous shows. You really like that addition. I felt that addition was good to replace the players that they lost. Obviously, right now, he's not replacing anybody. He could miss up to 2 months with a lower body injury. Last season in 82 games, he had 16 goals, 37 assists. He added 15 points in 17 playoff games. The guys that I talked about him replacing, David Perron and James Neal, Perron had 66 points last year. Neal had 44. That's a lot of production, production that you're counting on Stastny to make up for. Not in the lineup now for potentially 2 months. I think that's a big blow to a Vegas team that's already starting slow.
Yeah, that's a huge offensive blow. You mentioned 15 points in 17 playoff games. He certainly could have helped out with some of these very bottom-of-the-league stats that Vegas has right now. They're only averaging 2 goals a game, which is good for 28th, or bad for, I guess, 28th in the league. And their power play percentage, 5.3%. That's 30th in the league. That's over 40 percentage points lower than Toronto's. Vegas is a team that you saw a lot of high-caliber scorers on last year you weren't used to seeing, like Jonathan Marchessault, like William Karlsson. Adding Paul Stastny would have been nice. You mentioned Neal and Perron being lost. The fact that their offense is not producing is scary, especially when you couple that with the fact that Marc-Andre Fleury has a save percentage below .900. Now, his goals against is good, which indicates they're not giving up a lot of shots a game, but a lot of shots that they're giving up are going in. Now, they had some rough games. They did play a game against the Capitals, who are coming off the Cup, big game for them. They played the Penguins, too, big game against the Knights, where Fleury went. But still, they played 7 games, and they're only 3-4, 2-game winning streak. It's scary for them. I don't like where they're going right now.
The most surprising number that I heard from you is that at 5.3%, they don't have the worst power play in the league.
Yeah.
I think that's incredible. Of course, it's early, so those numbers can kind of be blown out of proportion a little bit. But, I mean, what do you want to be looking at? 20%, give or take, on the power play?
Yeah, somewhere around there is usually
good. I mean, and you're looking at 5. And you set it to 2 goals per game. You take out Stastny, who's supposed to be a big contributor to that offense. It's going to be tough for them. They have to find offense somewhere else, and they need those guys last year who really stepped up into a bigger role than they've ever seen in their careers, continue that this year and continue to take that step forward. Unfortunately, now you're kind of making up for those players that you lost in the offseason because one of the ones you brought in to replace him, you're without for a little bit.
Yeah, not the best start for Vegas. Let's move back into the Eastern Conference. One last topic. We talked about this a little bit more extensively last week, but kind of hits closer at home this week. This past weekend, Justin Schultz went down in an ugly incident with Thomas Plekanec, broke his left ankle, out 4 months. What kind of things are the Penguins going to do to replace Schultz?
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. 4 games this year, he had 4 assists and was a plus one.
Pretty good.
Very good, I would say, for a defenseman 4 games in.
Sure.
Last year in 63 games, he had 4 goals, 23 assists, plus 22, 19 and a half minutes time on ice.
Those are solid numbers.
Hefty minutes to replace as well on that blue line. One of the things I think that concerns me the most is that he's a right-handed defenseman.
Okay.
And the Penguins do not have very many right-handed defensemen. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe Chris Letang is the only other right-handed defenseman that they have in their lineup right now.
Chad Ruedel-Edel is right-handed, but he is not in the starting lineup, so yes, it's
right.
Just Letang currently.
Right. Whether or not that makes a difference probably depends on who you talk to and what your left-handed defensemen are comfortable with doing. For me personally, I always get the feeling that you're better off having right-handed D-men playing on the right side, left-handers playing on the left side.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So obviously you're going to have some shakeup there. Your top six, if you're Pittsburgh, is going to be Letang, Dumoulin, Oleksiak, Mata, Johnson, and Juuso Rikola, young defenseman.
Rikola? Who's Rikola?
Brand new.
Straight out of Finland.
That's right. I don't know. I mean, I look at that defensive core and, you know, I have faith in them. I don't have faith in them. So far this season, 33.6 shots per game is what we're giving up, and we've given up 19 goals in five games. That's what worries me.
Those aren't great numbers.
No. That's a tough start to the season defensively, and you're losing, I won't say a Norris-caliber defenseman, but a guy who at points in his career has been in that conversation.
Yeah, well, especially in the season we saw Letang go down and miss the playoffs the year that we won the Cup. Schultz was the guy that stepped up. He wasn't really much of anything in Edmonton, kind of found his way to Pittsburgh, hoping to revive his career. Certainly has revitalized it even. He's definitely a top four defenseman for the team. And another thing you mentioned, he had 4 points. I feel like on the Penguins, besides Chris Letang, we don't really have offensive point-producing defensemen, really. Schultz was the guy, but when you take him out of the conversation, especially being the right-handed shot, it's kind of a tough situation to replace. Ricola, the guy we mentioned, is new to the team. He actually was very strong in the preseason. A lot of people were saying, we got to find a spot for this guy on the roster. Sullivan obliged, put him on the roster. He actually started a game in favor of Olimata, who's had a rough start to the season. So now you're going to see Ricola for these next 4 months playing every day pretty much. So you better hope that he shows up. Not to say that he's an 18-year-old defenseman. He's played in Finland for a few years, but still, new to the NHL, new to the Penguins, he needs to step up in a quick situation.
Yeah, and of course, Jack Johnson, NHL vet, but he is new to the Penguins organization, so you're still trying to build that chemistry there. Some guys on that blue line lack some of the speed that you would like them to have. Some of them have that speed, and that's kind of where I'm in the middle as to whether or not I trust this defensive unit. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, falls right in line with the theme of a lot of season-ending injuries. Unfortunate for the Penguins, but hopefully they can trudge forward. Coming up, we're going to take another quick break, but stay tuned. We have quick picks and bold predictions. Don't go anywhere. When everyone you thought you knew deserts your fight, I'll go with you. You're facing down a dark hall. I'll grab my light and go with you. I'll 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 go with you. Surrounded and up against a wall, I'll shred them all and go with you. When choices end, you must defend. I'll grab my bat and go with you. I'll go with you. I'll go with you. I'll go with you. Yeah. Stay with me. No, you don't need to run. Stay with me. My brother, you don't need to run. Stay with me. No, you don't need to run. Stay with me. My brother, you don't need to run. If there comes a day, people posted up at the end of your driveway. They're calling for your head and they're calling for your name. Yourself in a lion's den, I'll jump right in and pull my pin and go with you. I'll go with you. I'll go with you. I'll go with you. I'll go with you. My blood, I'll go with you. Yeah. Stay with me. No.
Welcome back to Sports Takeover with Matt and Chris. Let's move into quick picks and start in the National Football League. Vikings at Jets. I'm going to take the Minnesota Vikings. The Jets are sitting at 26th offensively, 22nd defensively, and Minnesota was my preseason pick to get to the Super Bowl for the NFC. I just think they're a better team than their 3-2-1 record suggests. I'm going to go with Minnesota.
Yeah, I think they're a better team than their 3-2-1 record suggests. However, I think they're going to go to 3-3-1 this week. Something about this Jets team is interesting to me. They're very compelling. Kicker last week had 7 field goals, 3 extra points. Remarkable. I don't know if that's going to get the job done against the Vikings, but Vikings defense has given up a lot of points in a few games this year. Going to go with the Jets. Moving on, we've got Saints against Ravens. I put the Saints in my top three. I put the Ravens in my top three. I had the Saints in this one, though. That offense, I think, is going to show that Baltimore's defense cannot play against top offenses. I think they aren't coming out on top, the Saints.
Yeah, I have the Saints as well. Coming off a bye, I think, is going to be huge for them. It's a great matchup. It's the first top defense with the Ravens, the third offense of the Saints. I just believe in New Orleans a little bit more. I think I had Baltimore in my top three. I think New Orleans is a stronger team than Baltimore. I think Baltimore will fall down from that 4-2 record as the season progresses. I'll go with the Saints. Bengals at Chiefs. I'm going to go with the Kansas City Chiefs. They're playing at Arrowhead, one of the best home field advantages in the National Football League. It's the 29th ranked defense against the first ranked offense. Cincinnati, I don't feel like, is a 4-2 team, as their record suggests. I'm going to go with the Chiefs.
Yeah, if anything about that loss last week, the Chiefs showed they are a better team, I think, in my opinion, than the previous week shown, since they were able to contend with New England. Cincinnati, like you touched on, they're not the 4-2 team, they say. I don't think there's any way you can go with the Bengals. I'm going to have to go with the Chiefs as well. Moving into college football, only battle of the unbeatens we got this week. We have number 16 NC State going to number 3 Clemson. I'm going to go with the underdog here. I'm going to go with NC State. Clemson hasn't looked like a strong team. They've had troubles with Kelly Bryant leaving, quarterback injuries. Something about this NC State team, I think, this year is going to show, hey, Clemson's not the top dog anymore. Look at us. We're undefeated. I'm going to go with NC State.
I'm going to go with Clemson. I think you make some very good points about NC State. Kind of a team that snuck up on some people. For me, though, Clemson has proven in years past here that they can get the job done. NC State, I need to see more out of them than a 28-23 win against Boston College and a 24-13 win against James Madison. I'm going with Clemson. I think this is an interesting one. Number 6, Michigan at number 24, Michigan State. I'm going to go with Michigan. I've talked about it before with them. If you take out that Notre Dame loss, which is a good loss, they're a 7-0 football team. Michigan State has lost to the likes of Arizona State and Northwestern. I think Michigan is a much more consistent team. I'm going to take Michigan.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with you. I didn't really think this was going to be that big of a matchup. You know, last week, Michigan State was not ranked. Michigan was in the top or in the middle of the teens. But this past week, they both showed they were better teams. However, like you said, Michigan State's been too inconsistent. Michigan has the good loss to now number 4 Notre Dame. I think Michigan is the better team, and I think they will come out on top. Lastly, in college football, we have number 22 Mississippi State freshly back in the polls in our favorite bottom five versus number 5 LSU. LSU was dominant last week in their win against Georgia, close loss to Florida. I don't think you can go wrong with choosing LSU, so I'm going to go with them.
I'm going to go with LSU as well. If nothing else, I think this is a game that they need. I think you're going to have some tough opponents, obviously, in the SEC, as we've talked about. I think this is no difference. I think this is one that if they lose, you're looking at a 2-loss team that probably doesn't make the playoff. Mississippi State, they're in this week. They'll be out next week. It's musical chairs in that bottom five of the top 25. I'm taking LSU. Lastly, we're going to look at the National Hockey League. An interesting matchup coming up in the next week. Colorado Avalanche at the New Jersey Devils. I'm going to take the Colorado Avalanche. They're coming in at 3-1-2. Decent start for them, points in 5 of their 6 games. New Jersey's at 4-0. I don't think New Jersey's that good. I mean, they were a playoff team last year. Maybe they'll be in that area again this year. We'll see, but you got to lose at some point. I'm going to say they lose at this point to the Colorado Avalanche.
I don't think they're going to lose. You touched on it. They have given up only 7 goals this season. Very good. On the flip side, Kyle Palmieri has 7 goals for them. Kind of surprising. Didn't think that Devils were going to be good. They're 4-0. Why not 5-0? I got them over the Avs. And lastly, today we got some bowl predictions. My first bowl prediction is going to move into the NFL. The Los Angeles Rams, only undefeated team right now. I don't think that they're going to be undefeated the whole season, but I do think they will end up going 9-0 before they lose Week 10 to the Seattle Seahawks. I think the Seahawks are a team that can show up in the division when they want to. The Rams might not look so hotly on that game. There was only a 2-point spread between them the last 2 times these teams played. I think Seattle will have the upper hand in that game.
We talked about that one earlier, and you said that that game is actually at the Rams, which I thought makes it even more of a bold prediction. Seattle can be a tough place to play. To me, the Rams at home, they're a favorite in that game, so I think that's interesting. I'll stay in the NFL. I'm going to say that there will be a tie this week in the NFL.
Again.
We have two already. That obviously has no impact on whether or not there is one this week, but it just seems like there's been crazy things happening every week in the NFL. Miami and Chicago took it down to the wire this past week. The week before, Baltimore and Cleveland took it down to the wire. There are some interesting games this week. I'm not saying that any of these ones specifically will end in a tie, but Buffalo, Indianapolis, Detroit, Miami, Carolina, Philadelphia, Dallas, Washington, those all seem like games with some teams that are sort of on the same level.
Well, on the middle of the road teams right there.
We'll see what happens. I'm going to call a tie, though.
Calling ties in the NFL is bold, but seeing how there's been two this year, it wouldn't surprise me. It just seems the way this NFL season is going. I'm going to stay in the NFL for my second bold prediction. Vontaze Burfict, the very much hated, I'm not even going to say loved by any because I don't think he is, very much hated linebacker for the Cincinnati Bengals. Looked like the cheap monster he's been all of his career this past week against the Steelers. I think he's going to be suspended before the season is over. I think the league will actually decide to look at these videos. I'm sure he'll get more plays this week where he leads with his helmet or just annihilates people's legs. Somewhere along the line of the season, he's going to be suspended for his actions.
I hope so. I just think it's better for the entire NFL
if
he's not playing. We're going to switch to soccer now. We talked about the Pittsburgh Riverhounds earlier. I'm going to say that the Riverhounds will win two or more playoff games this postseason. Obviously, they haven't even been to the playoffs since 2015, but I talked about Bob Lilly, their new head coach. He has some success on his resume, some championships in the USL on his resume. If the Riverhounds pull it off, it would be their first trip. First chance to play for the USL Cup. This game at Highmark, first playoff game there, 100th game, I think that's a big storyline. If they win, they'd probably be looking at either Louisville or Indianapolis. They haven't lost against either of those teams this year. 1-0-1 against Louisville, 1-0-2 against Indianapolis. I think that could bode well for them. I'm going to say the Riverhounds win at least two.
Haven't won a game since 2004 in the playoffs. Haven't been there in 2 years. You're saying they're going to win two? I'd like to see it happen. I think the city of Pittsburgh would like to see it happen. My last bold prediction is going to move into MLB. We kind of talked about how our perceptions on the pitching usage has been in the playoffs, not the best. I'm going to say that in this championship series, now whether it's AL or NL, I will not say, I think a pitcher, starting pitcher, will pitch at least seven innings, go to the eighth in one of these games. In the regular season, there's nothing bold about saying that, but seeing how the managers have been pulling the trigger in the third and fourth, and even the first like we saw today on pitchers, I think we're going to see one go into the eighth inning this year.
I can't wrap my head around the way they use pitchers in the playoffs. It's a totally different system than it is in the regular season. I think saying that somebody will go to the eighth is bold. I don't think it'll happen, but we will see. Time will tell. My last bold prediction is going to be in the National Hockey League. We touched on the Toronto Maple Leafs and how hot their start has been. Win-loss, we'll see what happens, but I'm going to say they score at least four goals in each of their next three games. That's every game that they have between now and next Wednesday. They have Pittsburgh tomorrow, they have St. Louis later on, and they have Winnipeg a week from tonight. I think those are teams that defensively could give way to the Maple Leafs in that hot start. Again, win or loss, we'll see how that goes. Could be some shootouts that they end up losing. See what happens, but I'm going to say at least four goals in each of those next three games for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Well, for them to keep averaging 4.71 a game, they're going to have to get at least four in them games. Good bold prediction, I like it.
That's right. All right, that's all we have for tonight, all the time we have. Thanks for tuning in on RMU Radio. This has been Sports Takeover with Matt and Chris. We'll see you next Wednesday right here at 8 o'clock.